was Japanese anime Slam Dunk, inspired by the Chicago Bulls.
James, for the win! It's good!
For the win!
Bang! Again!
Thank you so much for listening in and welcome to NBA Insight with me, Song. If you're an NBA basketball fan, a fantasy league player, or someone that loves a good podcast, we've got everything for you. We bring NBA entertainment, news, and insights into one. For today's topic, we are going to be focusing on The Last Dance episodes 3 and 4, key moments specifically within 3 and 4, and review if it is true that Japanese anime Slam Dunk was really inspired by the Chicago Bulls team. And to start today's topic, we are going to be playing some bad boy music. And why bad boy music, you may ask? Because episode 3 to me is mainly about him. I love him. We're going to be talking about the lean, the mean, the crazy Dennis Rodman. So episode 3 started with Scottie Pippen still not getting paid, arguably the second best player in the league, but paid the 122nd ranked. That's like an executive director being paid a manager's pay. You know, you get the point. And because he's so underpaid, he wants to, for the first time, stand up to management, and he actually said he's not going to come back to the team. He wasn't playing. So Dennis Rodman was immediately needed to play the step up for the team, right? And they started with Dennis Rodman, and I love him. So who is this Dennis Rodman guy, right? I've introduced him a lot in the previous episodes, and basically he's one of the best defensive players ever to play the game, but he may not always be the most motivated to play. And one reason why I love to follow the NBA is because I love to follow their life stories, and they truly have epic life stories. I mean, LeBron, Caron Butler, Kobe is pretty interesting as well, and Dennis Rodman is probably the most interesting one, and this guy is crazy drama. So we learned a lot of details about Rodman. So in college, I think due to sheer talent, right, height, size, energy, and you know, when he plays full speed. You know, in high school, in college, he was averaging 27 points, 14 to 15 rebounds just on sheer talent alone, and he got drafted by the Detroit Pistons. And you know what? When he first got drafted by Detroit and went to the NBA, he was actually a simple, quiet guy.
Are you serious?
And to me, that is like, are you serious? Because you contrast him to the later years of his career, right, where he was crazy, right? That is such a big difference. So apparently he wants to lead a quiet life. He actually loves getting away from people, cooking by yourself, you know, looking at the stars, enjoying nature. You know, and that is such a crazy difference, right? And I just want to find out what happened, right? What happened to change this person from the extremes, right? So I thought that maybe right at the start, he was already a defensive specialist. So he only found his niche in the second and third year with the Detroit Pistons, where rebounding, defending became the top thing, the best thing that he did, and boy was he a pest. So here are some really interesting things that I found out from the documentary. So apparently he revealed that he played basketball in the wee hours of the night with his friends, 3 to 4 a.m., and he got his friends to just shoot the basketball from wherever they want to shoot at, and all he did was he just stood there and tried to guess, you know, practice instinctively how to defend against those shots. And seriously, who does that, right? He just practiced reacting. So he broke down defense into a science. Who does that? I mean, when I'm playing basketball, everyone wants to do is shoot the ball, dribble the ball, do some fancy move. Nobody wants to practice defense. So for him, he not only practiced defense during like normal playtime, he broke it down into a science. So the crazy part is he actually studied where the ball went by looking at how the ball spins.
Oh, hell no!
My mind was blown. So he knew which player had what ball spin based on, you know, how they shot the ball. Seriously, what the, you know, he knew Larry Bird's shot spins in a certain way. He knew Magic Johnson's ball was a 50-50 spin. He knew Jordan had a shot that had a way of returning after it bounced on the rim, where, you know, he knew where to position himself. And he knew if he positioned himself a certain way, he was going to get it. Wow. And, you know, this is for me, as an amateur basketball player for over 10 years, right? It is really news for me, because normally when it comes to defense, when we are taught rebounding, you're taught, you know, firstly how to jump, how to land, right? And then the next most critical part about rebounding is how do you box out a player? Basically, how do you put yourself between the ball and your opponent? And then you anticipate where the ball went after it bounces off the rim. Say if a player is shooting off the left side of the baseline, then maybe you want to position yourself on the right side of the baseline. Say if the ball bounces off the rim, that, you know, there's this probability that you'll go there, right? So basically that's how you do it. But for Rodman, he looks at where how the ball spins in the air, and he knew that how it spins impacts the way it behaves after it, you know, it hits the rim. So wow, if I knew this many years ago when I was playing, I think I would have gotten a lot more rebounds, right? And get this, he memorizes how each and every star player's ball is going to move after they shoot the ball. Nani? That is insane. And defensively, his mindset is to be a rash. So he's saying to himself, how can I be a rash that people just can't get rid of, like a pest? You know, in every team sport, football as well, right? There are some players that you just can't get rid of. And this is Dennis Rodman. Imagine this guy. He's going to poke you. He's going to irritate you. He's going to scratch you. And when I watch him play, right, he really was a pest. He would put his chest in your face. He would dangle his arms to make you feel so uncomfortable. He really behaves like a rash that you just can't get rid of throughout the day, right? So he even says that, I want to go out there, and then he wants to get his nose broken. You know, he wants to get cut. He wants to do something to bring out the pain. He just wants to make it a nightmare for you to play against. So he also revealed that he actually studies. Yeah, he studies each opponent's behavioral tendencies before games. And I think that is quite news to me. I mean, I would think that he was a great defensive player, you know, just out of sheer will, just out of sheer talent and this mindset. But he actually puts in proper work, right? He reads reports on opponents, players, and how to defend them. So that was news to me. And like previously I was saying, when he was drafted to the NBA, he was a nice team guy, but he started showing tendencies when he was traded in the 1993 season to the San Antonio Spurs. Now the San Antonio Spurs are well known to be a very nice, a very formal, professional, very, very professional organization. Now, I don't know, back in the day, were they perceived as the same, but I would think it's about the same. And for them to draft Dennis Rodman and for him to go rogue, because that was the season where he started to get arrested for certain things. He got arrested for possession of guns, going missing, dyeing his hair color from brown to gold and then to pink and red.
Are you serious?
Imagine if you were the San Antonio Spurs and then you drafted this guy, this goody two shoe guy from Detroit, and then he came over and became batshit crazy. I think you would have the biggest surprise of your life, right? So, and then he revealed that it was actually his way to express himself. Except that he went, you know, batshit crazy, right? Yeah, he started going for photo shoots, and then I think there was one or two where he appeared naked except for a ball which covered his private parts. He started wearing mascara, lipstick, started having earrings, nose rings, mouth rings. He really started acting out in San Antonio, man. So, in spite of all this, right, but apparently Chicago Bulls, namely Jordan Pippen, they felt that they could stabilize Rodman. And they feel like, you know, we can stabilize this guy, and this guy has a skill set unlike any other. He was worth the risk, basically. And you have to agree with them, right? So on one level, you have the good defenders. Who are the good defenders? The good defenders were people with great physical gifts, and they took pride in defending. But the elite ones like Dennis Rodman, were the ones that are a little bit crazy, a little bit eccentric. And it's hard to play against someone who you just cannot predict their behavior, right? Because you just don't know if they're going to hurt you or if they're going to do certain things. And you saw that in episode 3. You saw him talking very cheekily to the referee, is behaving like a kid, and the referee did not know what to do with him as well. And he, you know, he had green hair, red hair, but MJ still called him a very, very smart player because he knew that being unpredictable was one of the ways that he could trump other competition. Here's a fun fact about him. He dated Madonna. Yes, he dated Madonna. I don't know how they met, but probably from one of the inner circles of celebrities they met, they dated. And Madonna actually told him to live freely. Basically, I think Madonna empowered him to continue on the rampage. So when I first watched Rodman, he was basically the guy that if he had an open shot, he wouldn't even bother to take it. He would simply pass the ball to MJ or to Pippen to shoot it, and then he would then go in, get the rebound, and he would score off the rebound. So when I first saw him, I was like, dude, this guy is crazy. But he was interesting. And little did I know, he made such a big impact on that Chicago Bulls team. So of course, he was also part of the Detroit Bad Boys, which I mentioned in episode 2 of our podcast. And those Detroit Bad Boys were famous for their ultra-aggressive style of play, which obviously isn't allowed in today's game, where referees go all out to try to protect players. So what was this ultra-aggressive style of play, right? So they were known for smashing opponents in midair as they are going out to score. They are known for using their hands to smack the opponent's face, head, neck, kicking the opponent's feet, causing your opponents to injure themselves. And basically, they want to let the opponents know that, hey, you want to score 2 points? We're not going to make it easy for you. So this team was also famous for starting something called the Jordan Rule. Right, the Jordan Rule was created because basically they were the last hurdle to Michael Jordan in winning Jordan's first championship. Right, like I was mentioning in episode 2, 3 years in a row, the Detroit Pistons were the main hurdle for the Chicago Bulls then. And they invented the Jordan Rules, where basically, this is interesting as well, because I never knew exactly what was the Jordan Rule, and they did whatever it takes, illegal or not, to stop him from jumping up, from taking flight specifically. So it was revealed that they make sure he does not go to the baseline, number one, and then if he is on the wing, which is the 45 degree angle, they push him to the elbow, which is near the free throw line, and then when he's on top near the free throw line in the center of the court, they would force him to the left, because Jordan was a right-hander. You force right-handers to the left, they feel uncomfortable. And then next, if Jordan is in the low post, which is basically an area very near the rim, they would get multiple people to trap him in the low post. So they get people from the top of the three-point line down to trap him. And then they also review, what if Jordan got to the baseline and he was going up for a dunk or layup? Well, he said, well, knock him down to the ground. Just knock him down to the ground. Oh my gosh. Basically, whatever MJ does, just knock him down to the ground. And I remember watching highlights back in the day. It was a pain to watch, because every point that Jordan scored, he truly looked like he was going to get injured. And look, is it really worth it to get injured for the rest of your life for 2 points? I don't know. And that is one reason that makes him the greatest of all time. I think even some of the Detroit opponents that were interviewed, I think John Sally was interviewed, he was saying, we're surprised he made it out alive. How do you make it out alive? 3 years in a row, people smacking you to the ground. Not only do you not get injured, you come back again the next year. Boy, this guy was persistent. And really, just go to YouTube, type in some videos. Jordan looks like he's gonna get hospitalized anytime, man. You know, they really force him to think, how bad do you want this? Are you willing to get injured, to put the rest of your career on the line just to score a basket? Yeah, and really, he took such a mighty beating. And at that point in time, mind you, he wasn't just a new upcomer. He cemented himself as the best player in the league. He won most of his individual awards by then, but he was still willing to put everything on the line just to win a championship, which to me really separates him from anyone else in the NBA. This guy was really, well, he's really willing to die, man, to win. So another fun fact that they revealed was Doug Collins. So back then, I think he was still new in coaching, and I didn't know he was famous for such a high energy level of coaching. So he was known for breaking into a full sweat as he coached on the sideline. So they showed video of him after a game, and then his suit was completely drenched through, and it's just hilarious to watch. Like, he looked like he was playing. So there was this monumental moment which was showed by the documentary as well. During his first game, they were playing the powerhouse New York Knicks, and there was 2 minutes left. So as usual, he was thoroughly soaked, wet in his suit, and he was so anxious, because in professional sports, right, every game as a head coach counts. You never know when you're going to be fired. So every game really mattered, and it was his first game. He was anxious. He chewed his chewing gum into a powder, and it was white all over his mouth. So it's like disgusting, right? What happened next? Michael Jordan walked up to him, gave him a cup of water, and told him in his usual deep voice, "Hey coach, take some water. Clean the gum off your mouth. I ain't going to let you lose your first game." Wow, what power, right? Say you're the coach of a team and your star player comes over and tell you, "You know what? I'm not going to let you lose." And true to his word, MJ scored the next 10 points in 2 minutes, had a grand total of 50 points that game to help Doug Collins, his coach, win the first game of his young coaching career. And this is the sort of will that players like MJ have, that they exert on the game on a nightly basis. And this is the kind of competitive spirit which I feel to an extent is lacking in these days in the NBA. We're really lacking players that can impose their will, their competitive spirit, and take over games in this day and age. So, you know, back in the day, you could run individual plays, 1-on-5 plays for Jordan, and everyone get out of the way because you know that, you know, Jordan is going to get the ball, but you also know there's nothing you can do to stop him from scoring. And the closest player we have to that consistent ability to take over is in the likes of course, Kobe Bryant. You have Dwayne Wade, and of course, recently, you have people like Kawhi Leonard, and of course, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant as well. And back to the documentary. So Doug Collins, the head coach of the Chicago Bulls then, saw Jordan become the best player in the league from the 1986 to the 1989 season. So he won NBA MVP, All-Star MVP, and Defensive Player of the Year. And the NBA, of course, they took note, right? And they were trying to make sure MJ rose to the next level to become the face of the NBA. And then another very interesting thing that was covered during episode 3 was, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Bulls legendary matchup where Michael Jordan's famous toe dribble jump shot over what looked like 5 different Cleveland defenders was forever immortalized. So the key thing to note, of course, the Bulls were not known for rising up at that point in time. So they were not known to win games. They were always the team to fall short. And the fun fact that they revealed here was, it was revealed that Ron Harper, whom was later on Jordan's teammate, should have been the one defending him during that game against Cleveland. But coach chose Craig Elo.
"Stop it. Get some help."
Whom, for all the basketball greatness he possessed, he was a very good player then, will arguably be remembered not for his skills, but for how Jordan shot the famous shot over him. Dude, from certain angles, it really looked like the entire Cleveland Cavaliers team was trying to guard Jordan to prevent him from even taking the ball at first. But he made the shot anyway. He jumped up, he pumped his fist in the air, and well, history was made, right? Such a moment. And then another turning point in the documentary was when Scottie Pippen finally stopped his cool, because he knew that eventually he's not going to outlast the organization, and he finally decided, "I'm going to play." So here's another fun fact about him. Do you know that he actually has one of the deepest voices in the NBA? Let's hear.
"He mimicked Michael Jordan in a lot of ways. And it was a guy that, you know, I watched him watch films on one of the greatest players that ever played the game. And he emulated his game to the T. And to some degree overcame all of his weaknesses and became, to me, one of the greatest players to ever play the game."
Boy, is that man's voice deep. So when Pippen actually came back to play, that was when Rodman feel like, you know, I'm kind of like the son, the child that's left out of the family again. That's when he started to go off. He lacked accountability. And it was only when he started to admit, well, his lack of accountability, that the Chicago Bulls finally started to win. And there was this scene that to me was really interesting. They showed a live in-game moment between Jordan and Rodman. And Jordan was asking Rodman to let him know when a basketball screen is coming. And when the screen comes, to let Jordan know to switch so that no one player is open. So that no one player is open for an easy basket. And the way that Michael Jordan spoke to Dennis Rodman reminded me so much of when Kobe Bryant speaks to Pau Gasol during Kobe's 4th and 5th title run. And you can see that the way Dennis Rodman speaks and listens to MJ, right, the kind of respect he had for Michael Jordan was unparalleled. But irregardless of the amount of respect he had, after Scottie Pippen came in, Rodman felt left out. And that was it. So here is one of the funniest key moments of episode 3. So Jordan claims that Rodman was driven bored as hell when Pippen came back, because Rodman became like the third wheel, right? So, and he felt like Rodman having to step up, being accountable, having to be a role model citizen, drove him mad. So here is the funny moment. One day, Phil Jackson, head coach of the Chicago Bulls, told Jordan that, hey, Dennis wants to tell you something. And I shit you not, right? MJ quoted and said, and when Dennis wants to tell me something, I knew it's not something I fucking want to hear. So, this is really funny hearing it from him. So Dennis says that I need a vacation. Well, MJ knew what was coming, right? Dennis Rodman told him that I needed to go to Vegas.
You serious?
And Jordan knew that, well, if we let him go, we are never ever going to see him again. So, guess what? Rodman went to Vegas. For how long? Well, to the point where Michael Jordan had to head down to Las Vegas himself, find him in his hotel room, half naked with Carmen Electra, and grab him home from there. This guy's mad. This guy is so crazy in drama, right? So before we dive into episode 4, let me review. Was the anime Slam Dunk, the Japanese anime, inspired by the Chicago Bulls? And the answer is no. But someone on the Chicago Bulls team looks to have inspired main lead Sakuragi in the Japanese anime Slam Dunk. Who's that person on the Chicago Bulls team? None other than Dennis Rodman. Right, we see the same red hair, we see the same defensive focus, we see the same focus on rebounding, defensive intensity. It's uncannily similar to what Rodman is about. Okay, so moving on to episode 4. I'm going to change the format a little bit. I'm going to share what I like most about episode 4 and then some fun facts, which one of them is quite close to my heart. What I like most about episode 4, namely Phil Jackson and the way that he bonded with Dennis Rodman. So instead of how a typical coach would bond with the players, which is through drills, through the game, through plays, and instead of just being all work, Jackson bonded with him as a person through a shared interest, which they both share an interest in the Native American culture. And Rodman, in his own words, said that Phil never saw him just as a basketball player. He never saw him just as a defensive product as well. He saw him as a great friend, and that's how they connected. Right, so I think for me, it's Phil Jackson and some of the fun facts that I learned about him. So here's the first fun fact I want to share, and it's about Phil Jackson. Did you know that he has a nickname called the Zen Master? And how did that come about? He had a deep interest in Native American culture, Zen Buddhism. Yes, Zen Buddhism. And not only did he have that interest, he brought it into training. So when there was a head coaching change from Doug Collins, which I mentioned previously, to Phil Jackson, right? Phil Jackson incorporated a very, very different approach, which included trainings to do with meditation. I think they did yoga as well, which in those days was pretty rare. So that was one fun fact about him. The second fun fact, which is also about him, Phil Jackson won 2 championships as a player with the New York Knicks. Yeah, and he won it. I think the last one was in 1973, and the New York Knicks have not won since. I mean, let's not talk about the current state of the New York Knicks, right, which is really a pity because New York has a great fan base. They've got all the money in the world as well, but the team hasn't been winning since. So yeah, Phil Jackson won 2 championships with him, and that was the last time they won. The next fun fact, did you know the New York Knicks' full name is actually the New York Knickerbockers? The New York Knicks is just a short form. Their full name is actually the New York Knickerbockers. Moving on to the next fun fact, did you know that when Phil Jackson was coaching in Puerto Rico, then, it's a Puerto Rican league, the competition was so fierce, it was ferocious, that opponents would actually kill a chicken and pour the blood of the chicken on a visiting team's bench seat. The horror doesn't just end there. The mayor of a town actually shot a referee one time in the leg using a gun that he brought to the game, and it hit the referee on the lower leg.
Why are you running? Why are you running?
Now, I don't know what the stakes were. I don't know what people were betting on, but it was crazy, right? Who brings a gun and uses it in a game? I mean, who wants to be a referee after that, right? The next fun fact. The triangle offense, which is the brainchild of Tex Winter, and of course executed by Phil Jackson, helped Scottie Pippen become a point forward, which basically was a player who had the size and the skills to play the forward position, but had point guard passing, great vision skills. And this is what I was talking about when it comes to how Pippen set the mold for current generation players. This is the mold for players like LeBron James, Tracy McGrady, Lamar Odom, Hidu Turkoglu, Grant Hill, and you could argue Magic Johnson was the first point forward, but he played point guard for most of his time, so I give the honor to Pippen. And for those of you who wonder, what is this triangle offense? Basically, it is an offensive strategy. It's a freely flowing offensive strategy that allowed every player to touch the ball at least once, and depending on suitable situations, allowed player to utilize their strengths. Instead of always passing it to MJ, for example, instead of always having to stick to very rigid systems of play, players can decide based on what is best for them and best based on the situations they are in. Moving on to the next fun fact, and this fun fact, you see it in episode 4 specifically. Repeated failures in life can end up bringing out the best in us. And referring to episode 4, despite all of the talent that the Chicago Bulls had, the reason they won their first championship was because they were so mentally drained from losing. Losing and losing and losing year after year after year. And after they lost Game 7 to Detroit in 1990, instead of going on vacation, they were so sick of losing that they went straight back to train. They didn't book a vacation, they went straight back to the gym to train. And that was the same year that Michael Jordan put on 15 pounds of muscle, which is very rare back then because athletes do not typically hit the gym back in the day. And here is something that I wanted to share that is close to my heart. So this really reminds me of a fond memory I had with my 2004 high school team. So in the previous 4 years with that high school team, we had lost to so many teams to the point that the school announced that the basketball club was going to be closed down in 2004 if we had no results. We were the team that every opponent wanted to face in any round because they knew that they would walk over us. Maybe it wasn't an easy walk, but they knew that eventually they would win. We were no threats back then. Our captain then, who is also tuning into my podcast right now, thank you so much. He was so tired of losing that he was in our face, trash talking, insulting us every single day. To him, it was win or go home. There was no in the middle. And he was like our MJ in terms of mentally. He wanted to weed out the people who was willing to win and those that were not. he wanted to weed out the people that were not serious. And in that season, boy, I never played basketball like that ever in my life, and I played for over 10 years. Those who remained after our captain's bashing, trash-talking, boy, were they on board with the mission. We dived for every single loose ball. We were on the floor. We dived into the stands. We made sure there was not going to be any easy basket. There was not going to be any easy rebounds. And every loose ball was ours to take. We were always the hungrier team. Eventually, we became the school's best basketball team in history and emerged as a top 15 team out of more than 180 schools. And when I look back in the losing years, we also had talent, arguably even greater talent. We had really good players. But that 2004 team hated losing so much. We lost so much. We were so tired of losing. It ended up bringing out the best in us. The next fun fact, also taken for episode 4. The way to deal with a bully is to not give them the reaction they want from bullying you. Now, every year, Detroit bullied the Bulls. And the Bulls fought back, literally. And because of that, Detroit was always able to take the Bulls out of their rhythm of the game. They were always able to draw more fouls. They were always to make people be out of sync. But in that season, the season that the Chicago Bulls won their first championship, during a crucial play when Detroit pulled a flagrant foul on Scottie Pippen, completely kicking, pushing him out of court into the crowd. Now, what would a normal person do? He'd get up, he'd look at the person that pushed him out, he'd look at the bully straight in the face and fight back, right? Don't take things lying down, right? But Pippen chose not to give the reaction that Detroit wanted. He chose not to react. He sat there, he calmed himself down. He walked off the hard foul. And that was the moment when Detroit knew their old bullying ways could never work anymore. And Detroit lost and the Bulls never looked back. And that is a good lesson for dealing with bullies as well. We never want to give bullies the reaction that they want. So these two episodes of The Last Dance was really good. A lot of details that I just did not know previously. And I just cannot wait to catch up on the next two episodes of The Last Dance and learn other core details of the 1996-1997 Chicago Bulls. So we have come to the end of this episode. Thank you once again for listening in. I really hope that everyone is doing well and staying safe. We cannot wait to bring you more entertaining and fresh new insights on the NBA. So continue to follow us on Spotify, on social media. Stay tuned to the next episode of NBA Insights.